We come to the end of a lengthy passage. We've been working on this since chapter 8, this whole idea of food sacrifice to idols and finding ways to relate that to our own lives. Tomorrow, I was supposed to go on my annual 3-day backpacking prayer retreat. I'm not going in the rain. Sorry, where's your commitment, Pastor Pat? I'm holding out for that Indian summer and 3 more days. Just 3 days of sunshine, you know, and there's an effect. Okay, good. That's when I'll go. I know that Molly, my dog, appreciates a little warmer weather, and she won't sleep in the tent. So if it's raining, she's stuck out there. So best part of a backpacking trip. Anybody know what the very, very best part of a backpacking trip is? I mean, you know, you've got a load, not a day hike, anything like that. What's the best part? But for some, that's true. For some, that is true. That's a really good part of it. It's a really good part of it. Togetherness, yes, unless you're hiking alone like I'm going to be. Yes, true, yeah. Reaching your destination, is that a good thing? You know what? For me, the very, very best part of the backpacking trip, taking the pack off. You get there and it's like, okay, I'm here. And then there's this moment where you get to unbuckle the belt and you're off your sore hips. And then you get to take those shoulder straps off of your very sore shoulders and you get to drop that pack, and all of a sudden every part of your body feels better. From your feet all the way up to your shoulders and neck, you just feel like I could go another 5 miles, you know, if I didn't have this stinking pack. The Corinthian church was operating under the burdens of the Old Testament law, Greek philosophy, cultural legalism, and mandates. And these Greeks and Jews, who had really been at odds with each other, come together into this new Jesus family. They literally have made what Paul talks about, a new race of people. They did not consider themselves Jews or Greeks any longer. They considered themselves Christians, so that race didn't matter anymore. Gender didn't matter anymore. Age didn't matter anymore. We were all a part of this new family. And there was this freedom that we had shed all of the burdens of the legalism that came with the culture and with the Old Testament law. And there was this, literally this dropping of this huge weight from their shoulders. Their religion was no longer based on performance, but on grace. Jesus himself had poured his righteousness into them so that each and every one who had chosen to follow him was given this grace and this freedom. And so the Corinthian church, part of the reason that Paul is having to write this particular letter is that they were struggling, trying to find out how to walk in this new freedom and what that would look like in their lives. And so part of the issue was this food sacrifice to idols business, and they're just still trying to figure out, all food is given by God, so I should be able to eat it, but I don't want to offend my brother and cause somebody to stumble. And so Paul, in this passage here, summarizes his entire argument. So if you'll join me, I'm going to start reading in verse 23. He says, everything is permissible, in quotes here, but not everything is beneficial. Everything is permissible, but not everything is constructive. Nobody should seek his own good, but the good of others. Eat anything sold in the meat market without raising questions of conscience, for the earth is the Lord's and everything in it. Now, some unbeliever invites you to a meal and you want to go, eat whatever is put before you without raising questions of conscience. But if anyone says to you, this has been offered in sacrifice, then don't eat it, both for the sake of the man who told you and for conscience' sake. The other man's conscience, I mean, not yours. For why should my freedom be judged by another's conscience? If I take part in the meal with thankfulness, why am I denounced because of something I thank God for? So, whether you eat or drink or whatever you do, do it all for the glory of God. Don't cause anyone to stumble, whether Jews, Greeks, or the church of God, even as I try to please everybody in every way, for I'm not seeking my own good, but the good of many, so that they may be saved. Follow my example as I follow the example of Christ. So Paul restates this little Corinthian motto from chapter 6, verse 12. The whole idea is everything is permissible. I have this new freedom. And so they were rejoicing in this new freedom. I have a friend who's a pastor, and he grew up very, very conservative Baptist movement, and you didn't go to movies, and you didn't play cards, and you didn't drink, of course, you didn't smoke. And then he came into became a free church pastor and began to shed some of the old legalism and began to rejoice in the new freedom that he found. And so he frequently would talk about sitting down with his elders and, smoking cigars together and drinking a little bourbon during their meetings and whatnot. Now, there's nothing explicit in Scripture about smoking cigars or drinking bourbon. But he was so delighted in his new freedom that he began every Sunday mentioning and talking about this freedom that he had, that he discovered this new freedom. And the people in his congregation were going, okay, enough, you know. And there were people, obviously, who were struggling with various addictions. And he was now giving license to them. And so it created all kinds of problems. That's what Paul's trying to talk about here. You have freedom, and for each one of you, you have different freedoms than other people have. There are things that are not a problem to you that might be a problem to somebody else. There are things that don't cause you to stumble. I could walk into any bar in the world and stay there all night and not have any problem. I would never have a drink. Just, it's not something that appeals to me at all. I could walk into any casino and I can eat there, I can spend hours there. The temptation to me to give somebody else my hard-earned money just is not there. Unless you can guarantee me, you know, some interest or that I'm going to get a return on my money, you are not getting it, okay? So those are freedoms that I have. Do I know people who cannot set foot in a casino? Absolutely. Do I know people who ought not to ever darken the door of a bar? Absolutely. So why would I drag those people with me to those places or talk about all the time that I'm spending there and enjoying my freedom in front of them? So Paul is restating over again that there are some principles that we can apply to our own lives in trying to walk this fine line between freedom and love. So he says, the freedoms in our choices don't necessarily result in things beneficial to the kingdom. Not all of my choices that I make in freedom are beneficial to the kingdom. Another example. I could sell my house tomorrow and then take all of the money and buy a really fancy sports car. Right? I've got the freedom to do that. It's not immoral for me to do that. It's not unethical for me to do that. But is it beneficial? Is it constructive? Am I accomplishing any good thing? Not really. In fact, I'll probably tire of the sports car and wish I had a bed to sleep in, you know, not too many days afterwards. There are all kinds of things that we have freedom to do that just are not productive. And Paul says, so don't give me this motto, everything is permissible. Yeah, okay, everything's permissible, however. Your choices do matter. We are to be productive. We are to build the kingdom. And we're supposed to do things that are of value to other people's lives. So Paul restates his principle for Christian living. And the way that we live with this new freedom, the general principle is this: seek the good of other people. This new freedom that you have, we don't have a lot of legalism, we don't have a lot of rules, but here's a rule to live by. In your freedom, seek the good of other people. And if you can't, if it doesn't work out, then don't do it. Exercise your greater freedom of choice to not offend, to not cause someone to stumble. He summarizes then in verses 25 to 30 the whole food sacrifice to idol things. And so we've been over this a number of times if you've been here, so I'm going to quickly go over this portion once again. He says, if it's sold in the meat market, you can go buy it, take it home, eat it, don't worry about it. Okay? Nobody is sweating that. In fact, all the meat sold in the meat market is not even necessarily sacrificed to idols. So go ahead and eat it with clear conscience. All food is from the Lord. He created it all. Go ahead and eat it. If you're eating with unbelievers, rule number two, eat what they serve you. Don't worry about it. Don't sweat where it came from or anything like that. Go ahead and eat with them and, you know, don't worry about it. But if someone comes up to you and says, hey, this food's been sacrificed to idols, don't eat it. Now, why would he say that? Well, because for some reason it's a problem for this person. They would not be telling you this is food sacrificed to idols if they weren't struggling with the whole issue. And so, for their sake, for love's sake, don't eat that food. However, and then he comes back to balance things out, don't let it rob you of your freedom. Don't make up some rule that you now have to live by because of this person coming up to you and saying, this food's been sacrificed to idols. It's what we do, by the way, in our culture. In America, we love rules. We are a justice-based environment, culture. Right? We're not a grace-based culture. We are a justice-based culture. And so we want to know why things happen, and then we want to assign blame to the person who caused it. And so everything, every wrong situation, it's what we do. Now, other cultures don't operate that. In the East, it is far more, shame and honor type culture. In Russia, it's kind of like, hey, bad things happen, so, you know, get over it. But ours is a very justice-based culture, not a grace-based culture. So, we want to make rules. So, if a kid goes down and he, stumbles on a sidewalk and skins his knee, right? Then we want to find out, we want to make a rule now so that no kid will ever stumble and skin his knee again. And so we will pass any number of laws to try to eliminate. We will set up a whole new system, a safety crew that has to patrol the walkways. And there will be OSHA people that are inspecting every cement pour. And that's where we go. And Paul is saying, no. No. We just unloaded that burden. We just dropped that pack. Go ahead and live in your freedom. Yes, there's going to be situations where somebody might get offended or hurt. And, do your best to do that. But you do not have to set up rules for living based on that. You do have freedom. Live in that freedom as much as you possibly can. Seek the good of other people. That's the principle. So, he goes on then, and he says, most of all, be thankful. Be thankful for what the Lord has provided for you. If there's food put in front of you, be thankful for it. Do you pray before your meals? It's a lost art now. And that people are praying less and less for their meals. And particularly, I just read an article about the number of people who now pray over their meals at restaurants is like next to none. You just don't see people praying over their meals at restaurants anymore. It was a great article, I won't go into it, but he made a great case for what a powerful statement it is when people stop and pray over their meal in a restaurant. I just encourage you, it is a very simple thing to do. To go back, and to every time you're about ready to partake of what God has provided for you, to give him a genuine, heartfelt thanks for it. We need to practice being more thankful, not less thankful. And when you're out at the restaurant, drop your head, say a prayer. Make a big deal of it. Make a big deal of it. Ask the people who are with you to pray. I know there are some who say, no, I don't force it on other people. I bow real quick and say thanks to the Lord. Yeah, that's okay. That's fine. But what in the world do we have to be ashamed of? We're giving thanks to the one who provided us with our abundance. There's absolutely nothing wrong. And yes, there may be somebody out there. It's possible that there's someone somewhere who would be offended by you praying in public. And I'm sorry for them. I'm not sorry for you. Go ahead, be thankful, and look for ways to be thankful. In the closing verses here, he gives some important principles, some summary principles for how we're to live out our freedom. And so he begins in verse 31. He says, okay, so first off, whether you eat or drink, whatever you do, principle number one, if you're taking notes, and I see all of you busily writing here, God's glory. Do it all for the glory of God. Whatever you do, do it all for the glory of God. He goes, this is from one of my commentators to Blomberg. He points out these three principles. The second principle is relating to the gospel. The first is God's glory. The second is the gospel. Whenever it gets in the way of the gospel, whenever what you're doing is about to get in the way of somebody hearing or receiving the gospel, don't do it. If it is not going to advance the gospel in their lives, if it's actually going to be a stumbling block, don't do it, whatever it is. And then the third principle in chapter 11, verse 1, which most commentators are actually putting with this section and not the section anymore. Be an example to follow. Paul says to the Corinthians, check out how I've been doing it. Look at the way I've been handling this freedom. It's the best example you've got right now. You don't have a lot of mentors. I'm your spiritual father, and so follow me. As I follow Christ, you know, I mean, certainly if I'm doing something that is not Christ-like, don't do that. But as I follow Christ, follow me. And so those are the three principles. God's glory, the advancement of the gospel, and be an example. So let's talk about some of these things, okay? Let's talk about this whole fine line that we walk between freedom and love. I'm glad that our salvation is not performance-based. Because here's the deal. As righteous as you think you are, as good as you think you are, you're not very good. You're not cutting it. Right? We are so unaware of how much grace we need every day. We are so unaware of how much selfishness we are steeped in and how much our whole world is centered around us. We can't even begin to fathom the oceans of grace we need every day. So don't lapse back into that old performance-based religious stuff that says, because I came to church today, I've done a good thing. I've earned a little something. And because I had my devotions this morning and I read, you know, my little devotional, I prayed my prayers, now I'm somebody. Now I'm one of the spiritual elite. That's not how it works. You are living in the midst of His grace and love, and He has given you your next breath. And He continues to, like I said, He poured His righteousness in you. You haven't earned anything. Your righteousness or what? Filthy rags. Filthy rags. Do you know what those filthy rags are? So the filthy rags that Isaiah talks about were the rags that women used during their menstrual cycle. So these are the worst of the rags. This is the most awful. And Isaiah says, your righteousness, my righteousness, amounts to a pile of filthy rags. So, forget the performance-based religion. You're not earning anything. Everything you do becomes this act of love. I am unselfish to this person because of what God has done for me. I come to church because of what He's done for me. Everything is lived out then in this life of thankfulness and love for Jesus. Love should then trump our freedom every time. Love trumps freedom. So, if there's no love in it, if it's just all about me, I need to correct my understanding. Just because you can doesn't mean you should. And then, what would Jesus do? How many of you have read the little book? It's probably turn of the century book, In His Steps. In His Steps was the whole inspiration. It came back into vogue briefly during the 80s and 90s. And as a result, there was this whole marketing scheme, WWJD, What Would Jesus Do? It's from this book, right? And yes, now it became so overused that now it is this source of mockery, you know, and people have on their, you know, back of their cars, you know, what would Frank do, you know, or things like that. And, you know, so it's lost its whole thing. And the, you know, the bracelets that people wore and stuff are now this source of mockery and everything. But if you've never read the book, you ought to do. You ought to read the book. The simple principle is it follows the life, the lives of several people who determine that they're going to, at least for a period of time, try to ask the question in every context, how would Jesus respond? What would he do in this context? What would be the Jesus way in what I'm about to do? Now, I don't care about what the culture says. I don't care about all the jokes that they make about what would Jesus do or anything like that. That right there is the essence of our lives. As much fun as people want to make of it or whatever, your whole life ought to be characterized by the question, what would Jesus do? Because we are supposed to live like he did. We're supposed to do the things that Jesus did. We're supposed to say the things that Jesus would have said. We're supposed to go to the places that Jesus would have gone. Just read all over again the whole section where Jesus is talking about the end times. And at the very end of that, he said, you know, if you didn't feed, clothe, visit prisoners, and give water to the least of these, guess what? You're not a part of me. Because the Jesus life, the Jesus way is characterized by this selfless, sacrificial living. So what would Jesus do? I don't know. It characterizes the whole life. It characterizes everything that we're to be about. And then the summary principles. In determining what Jesus would do, there are three questions that we ought to ask from Blomberg's principles here. The first question that we ought to ask in determining what Jesus would do is this. Does it glorify God? Is what I'm about to do going to glorify God? It's a good question. Because if it doesn't, if it brings and detracts from the glory of God, don't do it. It's a good rule of thumb. The second question, does it advance or hinder the gospel in someone's life? Is what I'm about to do something that is going to help advance the gospel and be an example to people? Or is it going to be a stumbling block? Am I going to be leading people into sin because of what I'm about ready to do? And then the third question. How does this impact the example I am trying to give to others? Because every single one of you ought to be able to say what Paul is saying. And Paul is confident enough in his walk with Jesus to say, follow me. Can you say that? You know, that's where we need to go. You need to be at the point where you can say, follow me. I'm following Jesus. It's okay, because the steps that I'm stepping in, I'm trying to step in the same footsteps of Jesus. Ah, the title of the book, In His Steps. And you can come along and you can step where I have stepped and follow the example that I'm leaving. Those are three great questions. They are old questions. They are questions that people have been telling the church to ask before making decisions for centuries. What you hear normally on Sunday mornings is rarely anything new. I'm sorry. It is the life of the preacher that we never get to preach anything that is that is new or fresh. We're always talking about this ancient book that is so full of wisdom that we can never exhaust it. We can't get beyond it. If we do, we're idiots. The preacher who begins to go beyond this and to preach something else is an absolute idiot, because everything we need is right here. And so I keep telling you the same stuff over and over again. And it's great for me. I don't know about you, but every week I'm reminded all over again of what I'm supposed to look like and how I'm supposed to live. And then I come here on Sunday mornings, I'm going, okay, I learned this stuff this week about how I'm supposed to live it. And guess what? You ought to do it too, because I'm saying, follow me. Follow me. Do it. Do the things I'm doing, because I'm trying to do the things that Jesus did. And when I don't do that. In fact, you can call me out on it. Here's what I want you to do. This book is cheap. It might cost you $1.50, I don't know. Go on Amazon or go to a used bookstore and buy Charles Sheldon's book, In His Step. If you've never read it or it's been a long, long time, pick it up. It's a really easy read. It's, okay, it's not great literature. Okay? It's not great literature, but it's a great book. And there's a difference. I know, I'm an English major. It'll read fast. It will read, if you've ever read a romance novel, it'll read like that. Very simple, very straightforward, and you'll be through it just like that. But it will move you as you watch these people's lives change dramatically just by asking the question, I wonder how Jesus would respond. I wonder what he would do here. And the radical decisions that they have to make in their lives, and then the example that they leave for others, it's absolutely inspiring. So much so that it spawned a movement. I want you to read that book, and then after you've read it, I want you to try to live it for a week. Just a week. I want you to commit to asking that question and try to do it for 1 week and see how radically different your life might look. So that's my challenge to you this morning. We're going to have communion here. And so if the elders would like